Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another exciting episode of Thrower Podcast. Today, we're talking Gemini mobile app. USCFTC asks for comments to improve Ethereum blockchain. Bitcoin-friendly Square tops iOS store. And then finally, in our main topic, we're discussing Ethereum Explained. That's right. We have Tim and Alistar of Broadhaven. It's going to be epic. Thrower Podcast, starting now.
Welcome to Thriller with Car Gonzalez, broadcasting from Austin, Texas, via Simplecast, and supported by listeners like you. It's time for the news. 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 Thriller with Gonzalez.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of Thriller Podcast. I am your host, Car Gonzalez. Today is December 12th, 2018. Let's jump into the news. Looks like we have the USCFTC asking for comments to improve understanding of Ethereum blockchain. That's right. The US Commodity Futures Trading Commission has asked for public comments to improve its knowledge of Ethereum. They say, in order to improve the commission's understanding of Ethereum and its underlying technology, we are announcing an intention to publish a respective request for information with the Federal Register. In the upcoming RFI, the commission will request public comments on a wide range of questions, such as Ethereum-related technology opportunities, risks, and mechanics, its future market features, as well as use cases of Ethereum network applications. Moreover, the CFTC has expressed the wish to better understand the differences and similarities between Ethereum and, of course, Bitcoin, specifically the opportunities, challenges, and risks associated with Ethereum. And we must remember, in late November, Lab CFTC published a primer concerning smart contracts following its first crypto publication in October 2017, the document titled Primer on Smart Contracts. It's basically Innovation Hub formed a working definition of the technology in addition to outlining its risk and benefits. Pretty cool. It's very interesting to see the government get more involved with crypto and its understanding. I love it. Next up, we have Bitcoin-friendly Square tops iOS store. That's right. The Square Cash app has made the top charts in iTunes. It is number one, and it's probably the easiest way to buy Bitcoin. Although this development isn't exciting in and of itself, the fact that the Cash App natively supports Bitcoin is undoubtedly a fact that struck a chord with crypto diehards worldwide. I believe we were talking about this last December, if you remember, and how epic this was. I really hope Jack Dorsey really thinks about adding Ethereum. At this point, buying Bitcoin on there is super easy. On Square Cash App. We have a link in our show notes. It's a free $5. Use that link. However, Coinbase, valued at $8 billion after venture funding, is likely to go on without a fight. Weeks alone, the world-renowned, well-diversified upstart has done its best to build on its already expensive product roster. For instance, Coinbase's head of coverage, Christine Sandler, made a guest appearance on Cheddar, that's right, the fintech outlet, 2 weeks back, discussing how they were releasing OTC desk over the counter. And then, of course, we know that they just started listing 0x, BAT, Zcash, and a horde of other ERC-20 tokens. So they have a lot of catching up to do, but I do believe the Cash App is doing some great things because they're literally, and I've been saying this for over a year now, they're literally an update away to letting small businesses accept Bitcoin. That's going to be awesome when they do. And then in our last piece of news, Gemini mobile app, crypto on the go. That's right. The future of money is being created by the Winklevoss twins, our favorite twinsies. They have released a new app on the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store. It's called the Gemini mobile app. And you know what's interesting is I have been using Gemini for a very long time to buy Bitcoin and Ethereum, mostly Ethereum. And what's fascinating is I have been using their actual service, their actual website, to access it from my mobile device for almost a year now at this point. And I must say that it worked pretty damn well on a mobile device before, the Gemini website. But now that they made this mobile app, oh, it's going to be so awesome just buying some Ethereum just like really fast whenever I want to. And then you can set up buy and sell trades, and you can transfer it over to wherever you want, and you can add, you know, different accounts. And yeah, it's really easy. I'm a big fan of Gemini. I know there's a lot of people that despise Gemini. I totally get it. Everybody has their favorite place. But, you know, me personally, I use Gemini because I think it's easy and I don't mind paying the little extra fees, especially since the user interface is so simple to use, you know. And I really think what they're doing is some exceptional work. They don't make too big of a splash like Coinbase. They just kind of, you know, go with the flow and they stick with what they know, and they're very professional. I like it. And that's all we got for news. Next up, that's right, let's get into interesting video of the day.
Thriller Podcast. Interesting crypto video of the day.
So today's interesting video of the day is a pretty damn good one. And you should probably listen to this because it's telling you why you should hold on to your private keys. And I've been saying this for the past couple weeks now because it's very important. When Bitcoin gets this low, people get desperate. Hackers come out of the woodwork and scams start popping out of nowhere. And I want everybody to realize that if you have your Bitcoin, you know, offline in a hardware wallet or in a cold storage wallet, whatever you have to do, but as long as you have your private keys and your Bitcoin tied to it and you're not leaving them on exchanges, you're doing the right thing. Well, Max Keiser has this very same thing as well, and he talks about it. Check this out.
Because they keep making noises about it, like it's just coming. We just need to get price discovery locked down. We're not happy with how you're doing price discovery. And but you think that they're pushing it because they're doing due diligence or because it's an orchestrated campaign to kind of introduce more of what I'm hearing you say there, more of the Wall Street products and therefore gain more of the product market share?
Well, it's interesting. The SEC has actually not been greenlighting this, so they've actually put the brakes on it. But I will say this, that the moment Wall Street started getting into Bitcoin was when Bitcoin peaked in price. And in retrospect, that's actually not a shock because
the CME brought in the futures contract last December at 20,000 per Bitcoin, and we've seen nothing but down ticks since then.
And then you had the Bakkt announcement, which is a sister company of the New York Stock Exchange. And then when the SEC chairman last week implied that the ETF isn't going to be approved anytime soon, guess what? Bitcoin bounced. So, you know, we can't draw gross generalizations, but I know the theory behind why that's indeed the case. It's very counterintuitive. A lot of folks would naturally think Wall Street coming in, wait a minute, more demand for Bitcoin. But here's the challenge. Wall Street coming in equals a lot of this three-card Monty that's practiced behind the scenes using rehypothecation and other tricks like that create artificial supply. And one of my very respected Wall Street colleagues even said that Wall Street needs to fix Bitcoin's supply problem. And he meant it in the best of terms because he looks at it as another asset that Wall Street can trade.
Right. Now, there is a Wall Street veteran who's in this space, Patrick Byrne from Marvestock.com.
Yes.
And he went to battle with the SEC over naked short selling.
He did.
And one of the reasons he was drawn to Bitcoin and why he's launching his own platform to trade securities, crypto securities, because he felt that he was a victim of this naked short selling and reg show, as it's called.
Yes.
He talked about the fact that settlement doesn't occur for 2 or 3 days. Those, even at that rate, the settlements are not reconciled 100%.
That's right.
So you have sales.
Failures to deliver.
Fail to deliver. Sales are not matched with buys.
Yep.
And you can conceivably have more people selling more stock than there is in existence.
That's right. It happens.
Right. And therefore, if you can print a sale out of thin air, you can drive the price down.
That's right.
Now, we've had this discussion on the show before in relation to silver. Silver contracts and naked shorting of silver. And there seems to be, maybe you can clear up this argument because you are a Wall Street veteran and you would know definitively the answer to this. People say, well, for every buyer, there's a seller and you can't have a naked short sale. But in fact, with this configuration as it is, you can in fact sell contracts that are not backed by anything, that you're printing contracts, yes or no?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. The Exhibit A is the Dole Food case, and where it was revealed that there were more than one-third extra legal valid claims to Dole Food shares than there were Dole Food shares that were legally issued and outstanding. That was a 2017 court case. The IMF has done some terrific work estimating the number of financial institutions who report that they own the very same treasury bond. So I was just reading on the train on the way here this morning about the Fed's financial stability report that came out last week. They didn't identify that as a risk issue. They have no clue how many times the same treasury bond is owned by the same financial, by different financial institutions.
Okay, that brings us to rehypothecation.
Yes.
And in the case of the London, infinite rehypothecation.
That's right.
So many of the scandals of the last 20 years, whether it's AIG, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, the London Whale, it's on this trick of infinite rehypothecation, which basically means, as you just pointed out, you can have an infinite number of owners of the same bond.
Right.
You're lending the bond out as collateral an infinite number of times. In the U.S., I believe it's capped at 140% of the fair market value of that security or something of that nature. But you end up with people routing their fraud through London. And London becomes the hot spot, the global hot spot of financial fraud for that reason. But so here we are with Bitcoin, and it is no counterparty risk. It's hard money. It's sound money. Wall Street gets involved, but they're bringing in the products. They're bringing in their bag of tricks,
yep,
which allows them to rehypothecate, which is to lend multiple times the same asset,
right,
which is a way, in effect, to control the price.
Bingo.
Control the price.
Yep.
The price discovery. Right? So walk us through a little bit more how that works.
Well, there are lots of ways that it happens. It all, as you allude, comes down to how the securities are lent. And so if Bitcoin, if there's a coin lending market, of which, by the way, there is a lot right now, the CEO of the New York Stock Exchange's parent was also speaking at the Consensus Invest conference last week. And he said, look, there's an awful lot of coin lending happening that's creating fake Bitcoin claims right now. I'm not, those weren't his exact words, but he's right. It's already happening. And this is before the really big Wall Street money comes in. Of course, markets are forward looking, so they know the big money's coming in. And so the price reflects an expectation of that. But ultimately, it does have to do with lending. And here's why auditors don't catch this. It took me a while to figure that out. Why are auditors not catching this? Because accounting standards post Lehman actually require that multiple financial institutions report that they own the same bond. From their perspective, as long as there's a different dollar of debt recorded against it, then the balance sheet's balance and everything's okay. What that does is just inflate everybody's balance sheet, but at a systemic level, you have no clue how many people actually are reporting that they own the same bond or the same security or the same Bitcoin until there's some sort of a reckoning event. The financial regulators have no clue. And to CFTC Chairman Chris Giancarlo's credit, he acknowledges this. This is a problem.
But that sounds, if the regulators and Wall Street and the fund managers are all taking advantage of what could ostensibly be called fraud, that is a racket by definition.
That is how the system works. And I'll tell you, most people who work on Wall Street are well-meaning and would be shocked if they really understood it. There's not a lot of incentive to get out of your swim lane. I did that. Not a lot of folks do. Not also a lot of incentive to look under the hood. And there's a great judge in Delaware, the Delaware Chancery Court, who gave a speech 2 years ago called the Blockchain Plunger. And he talks about how this technology is finally going to clean up the capital markets. And he said to the buy side, these are the fiduciaries of our pension money, our 401k money, our insurance money, our mutual funds, the long only buy side. These are the folks who should be pushing back to really clean up all these practices because, as he points out, the sell side banks like the investment banks and like the stock exchanges are making a lot of money off this. They're getting bid offer spreads and fees off trading assets that don't exist.
Right. That, I mean, they charge an interest on these sure, imaginary securities that they're lending into the marketplace.
Sure.
And it's a huge profit center for them. Now, you did a podcast recently with Trace Mayer.
Yes.
And this rehypothecation topic came up.
Yep.
And so there is an interesting situation with Bitcoin because all this reapothecation and all these schemes are enabled by the fact that the securities are held in street name.
Yes.
Okay? They're not held in the individual's name.
That's right.
You know, people buy stock at Schwab or whatever. That stock is held in the name of Schwab, and yep. Schwab's part of the racket.
Omnibus account.
But you can take delivery of stock if you want to, but most people don't. Okay, and certainly on a pension fund.
And the SEC's made it really hard, frankly. They don't want people to take paper stock certificates.
Again, referring to the racket between the regulators, who include the SEC, Wall Street, and fund management. But with Bitcoin, I can take delivery of my private keys.
Yep.
People have their private keys.
Yep.
If the majority of folks owning Bitcoin took delivery of their private keys, would it in fact diminish, if not eradicate, or get rid of this risk of reapothecation?
Absolutely.
It would.
Yep. Not your keys, not your Bitcoin, in Andreas Antonopoulos's words.
So there's a way to fight back.
Absolutely.
If you're a libertarian, if you're an anarcho-capitalist, if you're a... You know,
if you're a rational, common sense human being,
you live in Wyoming and you're packing,
yeah,
and you're down there eating a big fat steak, and you got a cowboy hat on, and you got your private key.
Absolutely.
Then Wall Street racketeers can go, you know, jump over a bridge.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that is the answer. And it's interesting because to the extent that Wall Street is coming in, I think there's a hard lesson that's going to be learned by the Wall Street firms.
Because they're going to be holding garbage. If they've got all these contracts based on reapothecation and everyone suddenly takes delivery of their keys, they're holding squat.
Right. And in fact, it can actually bankrupt them. And it's an interesting question. And I wrote a letter with four others, including two Bitcoin Core developers, to the SEC a couple of months ago, warning that if you're letting core market infrastructure get in and start creating Wall Street products, which settle on typically a T+2 basis against something that settles in near real time, you're naturally going to have those timing mismatches. And if Wall Street it doesn't acknowledge that there's this insidious reapothecation that takes place, which is very, very difficult to detect, right? The auditors can't even pick it up. So at some point, there's a reckoning event. There's a run on the bank, or there's a hard fork that reveals whether
is also another option.
Yep.
The nodes can hard fork out of Wall
Absolutely.
Street. They can say to Wall Street, give them a tremendous Wyoming middle finger and say, we're going to hard fork you to death.
Well, and to use Andreas Antonopoulos' phrase, corpo coin, Wall Street will ultimately end up, basically the Bitcoiners, the core holders will fork off into their own Bitcoin, and Wall Street will be left with corpo coin, which will be
corpo coin.
A version of Bitcoin, but that fits into their categories, but it's not
right.
real
Bitcoin.
Right,
I think that's already called. It's called Ripple.
Yeah, I mean, Caitlin Long, when it comes to Wall Street, there's no other person you should probably be listening to besides her in this space. She really speaks the truth. She's a 22-year banking veteran. She knows what she's talking about. It's kind of scary what they were touching on, because if everything she says is true, it makes you wonder of the state of Bitcoin next year in 2019 when some of these financial institutions start rolling out. But we'll see. Fingers crossed, everything works out for the best. But I am keeping my Bitcoin very tight to me these days. With that, let's get into coin talk. That's right. Let's do it.
It is time. Only crypto, coins, trades, predictions ahead. It is what you spend all day wondering, isn't it? This crypto dream. Only on Coin Talk.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, my favorite part of the day. I know it's your favorite part of the day, and that's why you're here. It's Coin Talk. But before we dive into that, I have a couple things I have to tell you about. Last night, my brother called me, and he was telling me that my mom had a stroke, and so I, of course, drove down to South Texas and made sure, you know, I was with her. And for the most part today, because this is a late recording podcast that we're recording right now, been with her all day, making sure that she, you know, has somebody by her side. And Yeah, it's very hard to it's very hard to see somebody you love go through something like that. If you have a mom out there, if you have a dad or siblings, make sure you tell them you love them every chance you get. I always told my mom I loved her, but I could have done it a lot more. And that's one thing that I'm kind of saddened about as well. But it's very hard, you know, to see somebody that you care about, that you've known your whole life, in this kind of state. And it's just tough. So I just want to give you guys a heads up. So if, you know, if there's a missing podcast this week or a missing podcast next week, just know that, you know, this is one of my favorite parts of the day, right? So, like, I love recording this podcast. Like, I love doing Thriller Podcast. It's one of my favorite things to do, and talking with everybody and being a part of this space is one of the best things I've ever done, right? So, yeah, so I just wanted to touch on that just so that everybody kind of knows, because it's kind of weird. Like, since I started this podcast, I feel like everybody knows me at this point, and I feel very comfortable sharing my life with y'all, just because, you know, just because you listen to me every day, and I talk to y'all every day, and it just feels natural, I guess, and it makes me... it makes me feel better. Like today, I was talking to some of my friends and my family and my wife, and they're like, "Are you gonna record the podcast tonight?" And I was like, "I have to. It's the one outlet that I have that makes me feel, you know, like I'm providing a service for people, even if it is just, you know, reporting news and reporting stuff like this." But I don't know. It makes me happy, and I know my mom would want me to be happy, so that's why I do it. Also want to mention, and I also want to give a special shout-out to Tim and Alistar of Broadhaven. They're on the main topic tonight talking Ethereum, and they were so, so, so cool dudes. And it's probably one of my favorite... I don't even want to call it interviews. It's more like just hanging out with friends, because they're both fans of Thriller Podcasts, and they made a donation to the Thriller Studio, and, you know, it just means the world. And yeah, it's a really good main topic. You guys are going to learn a lot. They answered all our Telegram questions, or all of your Telegram questions that you had. It was really cool. I think you guys are going to like that part. But yeah, it was really neat. And it was just, they're really great guys. And I love what they're working on and what they're trying to build. I hope to have them on, you know, again in the future when they're billionaires. Because they definitely have the right mindset, which I love. And then I also want to mention that we still have our t-shirts, our Crypto Winter t-shirts, and it's still Crypto Winter as well. So if anybody's out there wanting to purchase a crypto t-shirt, and they want to help, you know, donate to the Thriller Studio that we're building next year, by all means, use the link in the show notes. I think there's only like 13 days left at this point. And, all of your donations are going straight into Thriller Studio. And I can't wait. Like, I have a feeling it's going to be massive, and it's going to be cool. And I can't wait to share it with the world, and it's going to be awesome. So then I also want to mention too, Voyager. Voyager is going to be coming online here, probably, I want to say, in the beginning of January. From what I've been hearing in the space, Voyager is, you know, Uber's, I think it was one of the co-founders of Uber, they're starting their own exchange. So, you know, it's going to be fast, you know, it's going to be intuitive, you know, the UI is going to be slick, right? Just because their hands are all over it. And they're actually giving away $25 of Bitcoin. I know I mentioned it in the past, but that thing is probably not going to go for very long. So click the link in the show notes, you get $25. Thriller Podcast gets $25. That $25 goes right back into our Thriller studio. Hopefully Bitcoin moons next year. And then that $25 turns into $50 or $100 potentially. And that's even more money you're donating to, you know, Thriller Studio. So yeah, use that link most definitely, especially if you can't afford a t-shirt, or if you can't, you know, money's tight right now for everybody. And then we're going through this kind of crypto winter. So if you can't do either of those things, click the Voyager link and get yourself a free $25 of Bitcoin. I think it's US only. So use a VPN. No, I'm just kidding. Don't use a VPN. And I just want to thank everybody again. You know, this has been a very tough week for me. It's only the second day or the third day now because it's Wednesday. And I really appreciate everybody who, you know, chimes in on Telegram, who chimes in on Twitter, who messages me throughout the day and emails, and appreciate every single one of y'all. Just know that I always have y'all's back 100%. If I could ever be of any assistance to any one of you, if I could ever provide any value, please let me know and I'll do my very best. And with that, let's roll the disclaimer.
Remember, Thriller Podcast does not give financial advice. He cannot tell the future, even if he thinks he can. He is just some dude trying to save the world one Satoshi at a time.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for coin talk. That's right. Looks like we have total coin market cap at around 109 billion. So it was at 108. It looks like it's gone up 1 billion. That's good. We got Bitcoin at 3,452. XRP at 30 cents. Looks like it was at 29 cents yesterday. Looks like it went up a penny. We got Ethereum at $90. It was crazy. We saw Ethereum today at like, I think it was like 84 bucks. Stellar at 11 cents. We got Bitcoin Cash at 102. EOS back down to $1.90. I think it had crossed $2 over the weekend. We have Tron back at a penny. Cardano at 3 cents. Looks like it went up a penny. It's pretty good. Monero at $43. So there is a whole lot of, there's a whole sentiment going on right now, especially on crypto Twitter. Everybody's saying 3,000 now. I think last week we had touched on that was going to be 3,200. We ended up getting like 3,224 or somewhere around there. So we did end up getting close to 3,200. Now people are saying 3,000 for Bitcoin. Some OG crypto people are saying 2,800 now. At this point, and I really believe this, I really do think that if you can purchase now, even if it's like $5 or $10 a week, I do feel like that is probably the best thing that you can do with Bitcoin right now. I mean, I'm not saying go out there and spend like, you know, put your house on mortgage or like sell all the stuff that you have to buy Bitcoin, because I think there's a lot of time. I really do. I feel like there's most of the people in this space that haven't seen a crypto winter before. They're all saying that next year is going to be this big thing. I think it will go up. I just don't think it's going to get like as big as it did in 2017. I think to see something as big as 2017, I think going back to building apps in this space and actually having real utility is what's going to be the next driving force. I also do think that if these big institutions get in there and they start putting Bitcoin in 401ks and they start creating all these papers on top of papers on top of papers of notes of said notes owning Bitcoin, I think we could see a big spike. And at that point, that might be the last time Bitcoin ever goes that high. And I don't want to throw that kind of, you know, net out there, but I'm starting to think that, because at this point, because you got to look at it like this, like if Bitcoin were to go up, let's say after the halving, because everybody, at least me, I'm under the mindset 2020 seems like the next big breakup, but it could be, you know, 2021 or 2022. It could be 5 years. from 2017, right? But I do know for a fact that this next one, and I shouldn't say fact, I should say like I have a big hunch that this next big spike might be the last big spike we see in Bitcoin, because at that point, it would have reached quite a critical mass, right? So you would have overall crypto adoption from an institutional level, and then you would have all these banks and institutions, you know, owning this Bitcoin. And then at that point, there's really no other, you know, level for it to go even higher, right? Because of the money that's pretty much transferred into there. You still have old people in this space that own stocks, and, you know, the Warren Buffetts of the world all saying that crypto or Bitcoin is a pyramid scheme. To me, that just sounds silly. I love the fact that we have Trace Mayer out there just spreading the Bitcoin gospel. And, you know, it's kind of funny. He's like been making the rounds in all these places. And I think he went on Omar's show on YouTube here recently, or actually today or yesterday. You should check it out. It's really good. But he went on there and just dropping bombs, man, just knowledge bombs over and over and over. And I'm so glad we have somebody like him and other OGs in this space that are able to explain to a lot of us why to hold on for Bitcoin. I think if we don't have people like that coming in, riding into the night when it's, you know, there's just blood on the streets and everybody's scared and panicked. If you don't have somebody like him coming in and telling everybody, hey, be calm, it's going to be great. It's, you know, kind of easing everybody down. Like, I feel like what he's doing is a tremendous help in the space right now. So by all means, I think we put him on Thriller News yesterday. If you haven't checked out the episode, he was in our crypto YouTube space. But you should definitely seek him out. He's dropping a lot of information out there, and everything that he's saying is exactly what we all know. And it just needs to be heard from an OG crypto entrepreneur like him. I think that's all we got for CoinMarketCap. Like I said, 3,000, everybody's predicting this weekend for Bitcoin, and then 2,800 as well. So just be careful out there. You don't want to, you know, purchase in at, especially if it goes to 3,700 tomorrow or something like, you know, crazy like that, or 3,600, and then it falls back down to, you know, 3,000. We're going to keep playing in this little kind of cycle, it seems. You're going to start seeing XRP fluctuate between 31 cents and 29 cents, go back and forth. And you can, this is what happens. We go a little bit wobbly, wobbly, wobbly for a little while. Kind of what we were doing when we were in the 4,000 range, just kind of wobbling back and forth. And then it gets comfortable and then just tanks. You know, this bear market is starting to become a predictable a little bit, which is good. Which is good because we have our sea legs, right? So we're knowing what's coming and how to look out for it. So just be careful out there. Dollar cost averaging at this point makes the most sense, you know, for me, because I feel like, you know, I'm buying as much Bitcoin as I can at this point, but it's I'm realizing as well too. Okay, Carr, you got time. There's a lot of time there, Carr. Don't have to rush it all in now. So, yeah, I think that's it. Let's go ahead and get into our main topic today. We're talking Ethereum Explained with the guys from Broadhaven. Main topic starting now.
The world.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our main topic. Today, we are talking Ethereum from a developer's perspective. We have Alistair and Tim from Broadhaven to talk about Ethereum. Hey, guys. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Carl. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Carl.
Awesome. Can you just let the audience know a little bit about you and what you guys do just so they can get a good feel of who you are?
Sure. Yeah, I'll jump in there. And yeah, thanks for having us on again. So just to give a bit of background on Tim and I, we are former colleagues from the British Army. Tim is a Canadian guy who came across, and I'm a Brit. And we first started working together on sort of cybersecurity projects in the military. And that's where Tim first started mining crypto and evangelizing about the space. And I was his first convert. And since then, we've been doing our different things. But in 2017, we came back together and both sort of jumped into the blockchain space full time. And we've been working on various different projects across 2017 and 2018. And now in September, we set up our own consultancy, helping businesses implement blockchain. And that's been mostly focused on Ethereum. Is there anything to add on that, Tim, at all?
No, that's pretty good. I think one of the reasons I think Alistair and I kind of work so well together is Alistair kind of comes more from the project management analysis side of the house, and I come from the technical side. So I do computer science, and Alistair does more kind of the token economics and the business model design. So they're quite complementary skill sets.
That's pretty cool. You guys make a good pair. So the name of the company is Broadhaven. When you say consulting, what type of clients are you getting, or what kind of services do you guys provide?
Yeah, so the name comes from a beach near where we used to work. So the regiment was based out in West Wales in the middle of nowhere. There's a beach there called Broadhaven, so that kind of ties it back to our earlier history. But it does, who we're working with, it's established companies, really. So businesses that have been going a while who have seen potentially an opportunity with blockchain and want to explore it more. And we come in and maybe do a bit of education in terms of bringing their team up to speed about what's currently possible and what's maybe possible in the future with this technology, and then working really to look at what they can do now in terms of integration or building something new that can be either enhance a product or service they already have, or potentially create something new that will bring in a new revenue or create some sort of new value for the company. So we've worked across, you know, ad tech, mobile games. We've worked with sort of fairly large established companies, and then ones that are just up and running. It's been a sort of, yeah, really varied journey. I don't think anything else I've missed there, Tim, at all.
No, that's pretty good. I think, yeah, the real kind of distinction is these are established companies and not kind of what you might have seen with a lot of the ICO craze, where it's a new company with a new idea, with kind of an unproven team, whereas everyone, you know, that they'll have a board that, for example, to direct how the company's going to go. So these companies are generally making decisions that are going to affect an established company, so that they're probably not as willing to accept some of the risk that more ICO-based or ICO companies that run ICOs have in the past.
So it sounds like to me you guys are more like the when these different companies say, okay, we're going to start a blockchain, we're gonna do this and this and this, and then they get started down that path and they're like, oh, crap. So you guys are the people they call whenever they get stuck, I'd assume, or they made a mess of things, right?
Yeah, I think one of the things, I mean, people joke about it, but you've probably seen the meme, like blockchain, all the things. And, you know, everyone kind of chases the hype of blockchain technologies. And, you know, it's not right for everyone, right? So I think some companies who want to explore whether or not blockchain can enhance how they function, that's kind of where we can come in and really help them. So if it's just kind of, you know, initially some education for the executives in the company to explain what blockchain technologies are, because, you know, the space can be confusing as you move from like distributed ledger technology to blockchain to Bitcoin to Ethereum. What's the difference? What do these words mean? You know, a lot of it can just start with explaining to people what it is, getting a bit more of a grip on the soup of all the buzzwords. And then from there, looking at, you know, I think there's been some people who've kind of spoken about it much more eloquently. But if you look through history, every time a new technology kind of comes out, we like to reinvent the old technology or re-implement the old technology in the new. So kind of when the internet came out, well, it's obviously been in development for quite some time, but let's say in the 90s when the World Wide Web became really popular, kind of what was one of the first thing we did? Well, let's reinvent letter mail on the internet. And so we take like an old technology and implement it in the new technology, but it really took a lot of time, like, you know, many years for people to really start thinking of and inventing new ways to communicate. So then, you know, eventually you start having things like Twitter and Facebook. But, you know, the internet had been around for years before those evolutions happened. And similarly in blockchain, I think it's a similar situation. So we'll see companies who kind of just want to recreate the same thing that they've always done. But the real opportunity is to really reimagine the paradigm of how they work. And so that's really fun when you go in and help a company first kind of do some good analysis on how they do business now, and then look at how blockchain can transform how they're going to do business in the future.
also, we'd also point out when it's not going to work for them, which is really important as well. So if it just isn't going to work and all the technology is not quite ready for what they want to do with it, it's also good to sort of say, take a pause and say, revisit in 6 months when there's been more development in a space and when it's ready for you to adopt it. So that's another important distinction as well, not just going headlong into it just because it's new and exciting, waiting for the right moment for them to put it into practice as well.
Yeah, most definitely. I feel like we see that time and time again, right? So most of these ICOs were exactly what just Tim described, you know, taking the old, trying to force it into the new, and sometimes it's not even on a, you know, blockchain, or it's just it's cobbled together through like AWS or something, and it's just not entirely truth or factual or decentralized at that. Do you guys ever get the feeling like, I don't know, like, do you ever get the feeling like, I would assume like being an Ethereum developer, I'm not one, but y'all are, like, do you ever look back and then just kind of like sit in your chair and be like, man, I'm a total boss? Like, does that ever happen? Because, you know, everybody wants their own Ethereum developer to do things, to create something for them, or even somebody just to talk to about or bounce off ideas. Like how do you guys realize how insanely rich you could be, or like how smart y'all are, or do you guys think about stuff like that? Or you guys are just like, no, Car, you're crazy. What are you talking about?
Tim's ego is going through the roof.
Do you know what I mean though? Cause like you talk to some people out there and like, they're like, oh man, I need an Ethereum developer, or I want to build this, I want to build that, but I don't know anybody. Do you know somebody? Stuff like that. Like, do you ever feel like you're either afraid to tell them you're an Ethereum developer, or does that happen, or am I completely wrong?
I'll start and say you're crazy. I think, not really. I mean, most of the people who I interact with kind of regularly, it's done online typically, and then kind of you're in a community of people who are also kind of Ethereum developers or just developers in general. Yeah. So I mean, like, yeah, like you're, I mean, I'm aware that it is a unique skill set just kind of from my time managing and leading people in the army. It's not a given that someone's going to be technically competent. So just to be kind of a software engineer takes a lot of skill and time and effort to learn that skill set. And then Ethereum development is a subset of software engineering. It is again a further skill to learn, because it has its nuances of how you build something, which is different than building a traditional computer application. But I certainly do not walk around thinking of myself as a boss. And if I did, my wife would quickly put me back in my place.
I will say though, it is great having someone who can just in a meeting when people are talking about what blockchain is or what it can do, Tim's very good at just saying, no, that's nonsense, or it can't do that, which is quite fun. So I do enjoy it when he just goes, no, that's, you can't do that. That's not true.
Dad Kerr as well. I think it was a Harvard economist in the 90s did a study, Dan Pink is his name, on kind of what motivates knowledge workers. And once you've paid people enough money, and you kind of take money off the table, so kind of their like hierarchy of needs are satisfied, so they can, you know, have a decent house and pay for food and not worry about the bills. Once you've kind of paid them enough money, they don't really chase money anymore, knowledge workers, because they're more interested in kind of the intellectual fulfillment. So kind of the three driving factors he postulates are purpose, autonomy, and mastery. And so take money off the table, so you don't need to pay someone millions of pounds a year. You can kind of just, you know, get by a decent salary to make your life comfortable. And then it's actually just more about enjoying the work, learning all the time. Purpose, autonomy, and mastery. So I think, you know, building on Ethereum, you can get paid well. But also, you know, it's really a lot of fun, right? It's a lot of fun to be part of this kind of disruptive technology in the early days. And so being able to, like, you know, become a master of it now, look back at it and kind of feel good about what you're doing with your life, rather than kind of just being, oh, I'm a greedy bastard and I'm always chasing a bigger paycheck. I think people who might be in that domain may not be well suited to software engineering, because it's just not really the mindset you see in the field.
You know, Tim, that's some really great advice. Like, I've never heard it put like that. that once you reach a certain level, like you really can just enjoy what you're creating or what you're developing, and you can just focus on learning and focus on just creating, right? I mean, gosh, that makes a lot of sense, dude. Like, it's simple. It's like very simple, like common sense stuff, but like, I mean, it's never really talked about from a developer's perspective.
So like when I did my, when I studied software engineering before, I was quite frustrated with the university because a big chunk of it was really kind of looking at people. And it was kind of only in hindsight, I can look back and be like, oh, I can see why it was talking about people, but you know, it's about what motivates people. So how you get engineers to work, what kind of, you know, how they work together, why delays are introduced and all these kind of real human factors. And, you know, it's, if you're trying to motivate people and attract people by money, then they're probably not very good at their job. I think, you know, you kind of to your earlier comments, if you walk around thinking you're a boss, but I think you can be quite confident that in the 21st century, it's a really, really good skill set to have and a highly employable skill set to have. So, you know, I don't worry too much about being able to find a job in the future. Should for example, if Alistair and I decided to go our separate ways, or the industry changed and all of a sudden blockchain wasn't the thing and it was something else.
And it is creative as well. So this space is particularly creative as it for a couple of reasons. A, because it's at the very start of its sort of its adoption. So you're thinking through new ideas and how they can be applied. And every week there's a new technology coming out that's building on the stuff that's come before it. So it's rapidly changing. And then you take that into a different company every month or so, and then it's a completely new set of challenges which need to be thought through. So, yeah, going back to Tim's point about enjoying your work, it is a really enjoyable space to work in, and can be quite creative and fun in that way.
Okay, yeah, that's totally makes sense. So I always wondered about this when it comes to Ethereum from y'all's perspective, because you guys create on Ethereum. What is it about Ethereum, you know, besides all the other blockchains that you could choose from? What is it about Ethereum that you guys like so much or are drawn to it? Is it Vitalik, or is it because it's the second leading biggest blockchain out there besides Bitcoin? Like, what is it about Ethereum that drew you to it?
I think there's a couple bits. I mean, it kind of really looks at what perspective you want to analyze it with. I think if you just look at it from a purely technological perspective, in terms of a smart contracts platform, Ethereum is the most mature out of all of them. So if you try to develop on something else, you know, EOS is great, super fast, but really as a developer, I mean, I don't particularly enjoy developing in C++. Which is the language that you write smart contracts for on EOS. Now, yeah, there are other languages coming down the road. So when you build on EOS, what happens is your code gets compiled down to WebAssembly and that gets executed on the EOS blockchain. So you can have lots of different languages, programming languages that can compile down to WebAssembly. But the one that's supported right now is C++. And I find the kind of the syntax for C++ to be quite a bit less intuitive than other languages, I should say. So like the readability of C++ is not as good as, say, the readability of a declarative language, where kind of, you know, anyone who can read English or whatever language it's written in can read it and kind of understand what it's doing. If you were to look at C++ code, I mean, it would just look quite confusing. So I think, you know, that's just one kind of aspect you'd look at is, okay, the language that you're going to program in, Is it readable? Are there lots of good tools around it? And Solidity is very high readability. There's tons of tools for JavaScript, which is kind of the other big language that you use to interact with Ethereum as well. You know, there's tons of tools around for it. So just kind of from that perspective, it's much more mature than anything else. Kind of I pull my hair out a bit when I work on EOS. Sorry. Whereas I find the developer experience just so much easier on Ethereum. And I think also, like, you know, if you talk about kind of it being, I think it's the third largest market cap now, is it flip flops between Ripple on CoinMarketCap. But also, you know, that helps, you know, that there is some investment in making this thing have a longer life. I think Al's seen Vitalik talk before, so I can't really mention to that. But I don't know, Al, if you want to jump in there and talk a bit more about the project itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the different bits of support that come around it. From a company point of view, looking to try and get into the blockchain space, the fact that MetaMask exists as a plugin, and I know there are other versions of MetaMask on other platforms, but that's been around for the longest. So the small things like that from a complete novice company trying to adopt blockchain, the fact they can get their head around a Chrome extension and use that and then gain access to a wallet that way and have that link into the dApp they're trying to build. So all that sort of thing surrounding it from developers you work with who haven't worked on blockchain before, they've found it the easiest to come and get into that wider range of products and services. And Vitalik was speaking the other day about it, which I agree. I know he would say this, but on Ethereum, there's just a wider range of existing products which you could then tap into. So whether it's the wallet or whether it's the ERC-20 standard, which has been, you know, drawn a lot of criticism for its use in ICOs, but it's also pretty universal across hundreds and thousands of products. So projects. So suddenly you are interoperable with all these different projects that are on the go. So it's a much more rich place to get involved. I'm not saying it's going to be the platform that will be the one that everyone's using in 5 years' time, but certainly at this moment, if you are thinking about doing something today, right now, and actually implementing your business for real, then I think it's the only option right now. In 6 months' time, it may well be different, and you know, other platforms may well have caught up with the user experience and as Tim mentioned there, the language on EOS. You may have others available other than C++, but all these small things that just make it that much more difficult to actually make your idea a reality. Ethereum has the lowest barrier to entry for businesses wanting to do that, from our experience, I would say.
And obviously, you know, the whole scaling discussion is a huge thing to tackle. I think one of the things that, you know, just to touch on what Al was saying, you know, when you're working with an established company, you know, they have, you know, a team of, say, developers who are used to programming, maybe not on blockchain, but just in general, to try to convince them that the nuance of being a blockchain developer is okay. So with Ethereum, so in Solidity, when you would basically in the Solidity function that kind of gets invoked. So let's say, for example, you want to transfer money from my wallet to Alistair's wallet for some token, and I'm going to build that into a smart contract. What you want to do at the start of that function is kind of do a bunch of parameter checking to make sure that the values that have been passed are legitimate. So let's say, for example, I invoke this function and I only have 10 TIM tokens in my account, and I want to send Alistair 100 million TIM tokens. Well, perhaps one of the checks you want to do at the start of that function is to make sure I have that balance in my account before doing it. And what you can do is, if you realize that those conditions aren't met, you can throw an error message. So in Solidity, for the longest time, you could kind of do this revert. Okay, you know, Tim's balance is less than 100 million, so he can't transfer what he wants to transfer. But when you execute something on the blockchain, you don't get to see why that error was thrown. So you just see that your contract failed, and that's it. So if, you know, if you have your code and have hundreds, if not thousands, of lines, and it just says lines of code, it just says it failed, that's not really a good user or developer experience, because it makes debugging quite hard, and then it can become quite frustrating. And, you know, so like things like that are really kind of clunky in a lot of the blockchain platforms. Now, I mean, the latest version of the Truffle suite actually surfaces these error messages. So now you can kind of say, oh, it failed on the balance check, and then I know exactly what line in my code to look at. But if this developer experience isn't there, it just makes it really, really hard to deal with. So kind of in comparison, on EOS, if you want to just simply read a individual value from a table, so let's say, for example, I just wanted to get Alistair's balance from a table, it's much harder to do. Typically, you just get a bunch of rows of a table and then have to filter them. But it's like, I just want Alistair's balance. I can do it really simply on Ethereum. I can expose that information really quickly. Whereas on EOS, it's quite a bit harder or more clunky until you know what you're doing.
Interesting. Yeah, those are all very interesting points. We have a lot of developers that listen, and you know, y'all are the first developers that we've had on the show. We've had mostly had CEOs and stuff like that, but not too much on the developer side of things. But yeah, you guys make Ethereum sound really cool, like really, really cool. I know we have some people on our Telegram that want to ask you guys some questions if you're cool with it.
Yeah, of course. I would say, in terms of, it is cool. Like, it's really cool when something works. I think what you're doing and kind of think through, I broadcast this to a network of thousands and thousands of nodes. They kind of, competed to incorporate it into another block, executed it, then passed it back to me. It's a fascinating thing to be doing. So,
yeah, we saw at HoshoCon, one of the security officers for Shapeshift, and he gave an hour-long speaking just on smart contracts. And my mind was blown right after I saw that. I was like, whoa. I was like, that is so cool. Like, just the future of where smart contracts are going and why Shapeshift is so bullish on Ethereum and, the future of that stuff. So, yeah, it's some really exciting stuff. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, just agreeing that we certainly like it, but it's like I say, we're prepared to sort of change our minds. So at the moment, this is what we're sort of advocating, but we're not wedded to it, and we're not saying it's the only thing that can be positive and useful in this space. But at the moment, if for tomorrow you have to choose something, then this is what we're choosing at the moment. But we're more than happy to switch. So we're not we don't be accused of ignoring all the work that's going on. There's some fantastic stuff, and we're really excited to see it come through.
I think it's fair enough where, you can change your mind, right? So it's totally fair. Today you guys feel, that this is the best platform going forward, and a lot of other thousands of people feel the same way too, so.
It's just such an angry space sometimes on Twitter. You say something positive about one project and you're like,
immediately. You guys are in a safe place here. Don't worry.
it's kind of like, if you liken it to like back, that analogy about the early days in the internet. And I don't know if I like or dislike it, but it does have a lot of kind of truth in a lot of ways. But it's like saying, you're going to use Netscape Navigator and you're going to commit to it right now for the rest of your life. It's like, I'm not going to commit to Netscape Navigator in 1993. or any of these early technologies, kind of, it's, the right thing right now. They're the best we have right now, but it'll get better. And whether or not it's the evolution of Netscape Navigator or if it's the evolution of something else, kind of, just be prepared to kind of keep your mind quite agile and don't be too wedded to a single platform.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I feel like last year when everything was going up, I was falling in love with a different coin every day. So, so here we go. He says, why Ethereum? Why not something else that is faster?
Yes. So, this is a bit of a loaded question, right? It's kind of back.
I know. This is Zamp, though. He also said right after that, he goes, what is your product and what problem is it solving? And does it actually need to be on a blockchain? And then I told him, I was like, no, dude, they're developers. And he's like, oh, probably don't ask that one. But that's just damp, though.
That's a great point, though, right? Like, I completely agree with them, right? If it doesn't need to be on blockchain, then why is it on blockchain? It's not blockchain all the things. It's blockchain the right things, for sure. I don't know. Do you want to go first?
I guess it depends. It depends on what you're doing. Like, we've found a lot of one example we work on is mobile games. And there's some great work taking place on side chains, and the Loom network is a good example of someone who's identified the problem of the speed of Ethereum.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, I keep that just got released on Coinbase today. What's going on with the Loom network, or what exactly is that entailing? I haven't really done that much research on it.
It's essentially they recognize the problem that they see some great work going on in terms of game development on Ethereum. But the problem is, when you develop a game or a dApp game natively on Ethereum, you run into all the problems of transaction fees. Every time you trade a baseball card or every time you conduct a battle, you have to pay gas fees, which is a horrible user experience. It's also slow because obviously you're waiting for things to be included in the next block. And so there's all sorts of problems doing it natively on Ethereum. And if you can move a lot of those transactions off onto a side chain and have it run super fast and then just resolve back onto Ethereum for the, you know, whether it's totaling balances or just resolving the important transactions, you know, once an hour or once a day, then you can improve user experience, improve speed and reduce cost. And so they've set up a blockchain to act as like a side chain to Ethereum specifically for games. They're backing games being one of the first sort of early adopters that actually properly integrates blockchain. And so they're betting on that and creating the service for all these early adopter games companies coming onto their platform and using that as a workaround to Ethereum. So combining the benefits of Ethereum, which is all of some of the things we were talking before, like the standardization in tokens and the ERC 721, which has been really successful in lots of different of these games that have been set up as for like in-game assets, but allowing you to use the Loom network to sort of work around all those issues that you might find in games. Is that, Tim, anything you want to add on that at all?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's so much to unpack, right? So, I completely agree with what you're saying, Al. I think obviously the scalability comes up a lot, and I think there's a couple different things that you need to think about. One is, you know, what are you putting on the blockchain, right? Like, is every single move in the game going to go on the blockchain, or is it just going to be you settling the output or the end result of the game? If you want to do every single move, let's say it's a real-time strategy game, well, you know, existing blockchain technologies today are not going to be able to accommodate that, right? And really, why do you want to make an immutable record of that event? Is it just kind of wasteful? Or what do you really need to do is to have an immutable record of who won the game? Now, I mean, maybe then you could argue, okay, well, if you don't have an immutable record of every move, then someone could cheat in the game, for example. But the reality is Ethereum's not set up to do that today, right? And so to his question, you know, maybe he's thinking, well, then use EOS. But then EOS has issues as well. It's much more centralized than Ethereum. We've got 21 block producers in that blockchain. I find the developer tools a bit harder to work with. Then my developer experience is going to be quite a bit harder. So I think the approach right now with existing technologies is to do things in a side chain, where in that side chain it's not necessarily a proof of work consensus mechanism where everyone can participate. Perhaps it's just maybe a proof of authority, so you can process those blocks really quickly and then commit or maybe like settle back to the blockchain periodically as and when it makes sense. I think one thing that I just want to point out as well. So when people talk about transactions per second on a blockchain, it's free to read data from Ethereum, right? So there's no transaction fee paid if I want to check Alistair's balance or read who owns an asset or what data that asset contains. So, you know, I could be submitting hundreds of thousands of those requests and that would be executed really, really quickly. It's only slow when you're trying to write data back into the blockchain or execute some sort of smart contract code. That's when things really slow down. So what you need to do, and this is kind of what would make someone hopefully a bit better for blockchain developers, is making sure that you're blockchaining the right things and that when you are interacting with a blockchain, you're doing it for the right reasons and you're storing the right data. It's a bit lazy to just store everything, in my opinion anyways.
That's not secure either. If it's a lot of projects we see is people writing far too much or planning to write far too much data to a mutable record, which seems crazy as well. So yeah, being Spartan about what goes on there is a key there to make sure that those problems with speed are sort of reduced to their minimum.
So sorry, just have to add this, just kind of with our kind of cybersecurity background on, but like the idea of putting any personal data on a blockchain is just absurd. If anyone's thinking of doing it, please do not. I think just to kind of, you know, if you're gonna put your personal data, so you know your name, address, location, all that stuff, committed to an immutable record for all of history to be on the blockchain, you know, it's something you can never take back. And the kind of, you know, the answer typically is, oh, we'll encrypt the data. It's like it's still an immutable record, and if you ever lose those encryption keys, or maybe quantum computers traditional encryption obsolete, or any of these things, it's a really bad idea, and it's one you're going to regret. So just don't put personal data on the blockchain.
That's cool. I think that totally answered Sam's question. That's really good. That was a really good answer. I love that. Okay, so we got another one. We got John Poker. He's one of our longtime Thriller podcast Telegram people as well. He says, problems with proof of stake and how they think miners will respond. Will miners switch to ETC? Will it compromise security? ETC, I can think of more hard-hitting ones with some research. But yeah, I guess he's just kind of wondering, how will proof of stake, it'll definitely frustrate miners, but do you think it'll actually create any kind of fork or something like that? Or
it's kind of impossible to predict right now, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen in the news that Bitcoin energy consumption combined is greater than, I think, like all of Ireland or something along those lines.
Iceland,
yeah. To be fair, I think that, you need a comparison, right? You need a data point to compare that against. So just having that stat by itself is quite misleading, because I think the reality is, if you were to tally up all the computing power of Visa, it's probably greater than Bitcoin. Now that's just a guess, but I think, like I said, you need a data point to compare it against. I think with proof of stake, it's still too hard or too early to tell, right? EOS is on proof of stake, or delegated proof of stake. So, you have 21 block producers. They each have a time slot when they're allowed to mint the next block. So it means they can be really fast. And in Ethereum, I think the intention is only people who hold something like 32 Ethereum are allowed to be block producers, for lack of a better phrase right now. And so then that becomes exclusive, right? So only people who hold 32 Ethereum, which, maybe 12 months ago was a lot of money, and it's a little bit less now. But it's still kind of excluding people who don't have that amount of money in the bank. Now, it would certainly, conceivably it could speed things up, right? So when you have people trying to do proof of work, it makes it quite a bit slower. And if you put proof of stake, it'll speed things up. And then you overlay sharding on that, where you kind of distribute the data all over the place. You break it apart into multiple bits. You distribute that all over the place with redundancy. Then you have kind of, a faster mechanism to reach consensus, and an easier way to store data, so that when you download it, it's not as big. I think that those are all really good things, but I think longer term, again, it'll continue to evolve, right? That won't be the end of it. Maybe if they do proof of stake, you'll need something in the future to perhaps be even faster. Now, whether or not that's side chains, maybe that's how you scale. You have, maybe you have a local chain in your town. So you're from Texas, right,
Carl? Yeah, here in Austin.
So maybe Texas has a subset of nodes that are running the Ethereum blockchain in the future, all on proof of stake. And everyone who's interacting with Ethereum is interacting with the Ethereum nodes in Texas. Maybe over here in London, we are interacting with the one in London. And then those blockchain infrastructures reconciling maybe once a day or every 6 hours with itself. And so that way, when you're playing your Call of Duty game in Texas and I'm playing Call of Duty in London, our individual moves aren't really affecting each other. It's just every 6 hours they kind of synchronize back up again. So it's way too early to say. A lot of the kind of proof of stake work is still kind of just in concept phase. Now, whether or not things will fork, don't know. It's kind of hard to say. I think ultimately what I want is this technology to be adopted. And so I kind of want to put my weight behind the projects that are, ethically kind of aligned with how I think this stuff should work. I want decentralization. I want to kind of, bring banking to the unbanked. I want, to remove intermediaries. I want more transparency, all of those things. But I think to be pure in your beliefs right now might kind of prevent these things from being adopted and prevent these things from becoming more widely used. So there's going to be a balance there, right? So I probably would kind of myself, I won't be forking and I won't be moving everything back to Ethereum Classic. I'll try to continue to support the Ethereum project for the time being.
Yeah, that's really good insight. I mean, that kind of tells you exactly you're betting on what you want the future to become. Ultimately,
there are really smart people working on all these projects, right? Some of the, when you look at some of the stuff these people have come up with, I'd be willing to bet on them to figure out how to make this scale. Now, I mean, the scaling and distributed computing has been around for a long time. So this is, you know, although it's a new and kind of more of the popular main, the mainstream mindset, these are things that people have been thinking about for a long time, and it's a hard thing to solve. Yeah. It's not a trivial computer science problem.
Yeah. No, it definitely is. I got another one from Matthew in our Telegram. He's our OG Telegram person. He says, well, I guess you guys kind of touched on it already. He's a developer himself, and he's just kind of wondering, you know, developing on Solidity. You've talked about that, Tim. Can you just kind of give him, you know, where's a good place for him to start if he's looking into dipping his toes into Ethereum, if he's already a developer?
Yeah, so I mean, I think there's a couple things. The Truffle Suite is excellent. So Truffle Suite is a framework to kind of get your Ethereum development up and running. So it's got some really good kind of boilerplate code. So you can see kind of how to structure, like, so for example, like just writing a smart contract is great, but then how do you compile and deploy it to a blockchain? And none of that's, you know, the compiling and deploying, but the deploying, for example, is not done in Solidity. So you need to have more skills than just Solidity. So I think, you know, JavaScript is kind of the way you interact with it primarily. So you want to have a good handle on JavaScript, and I would highly recommend the newer iterations of JavaScript. So the kind of ES6, ES7 world, that's just kind of like the it's ECMA script is what JavaScript is kind of like technically called. And so the 6, 7 at the end of it kind of say what year it's released or what version it is. So ES6 and ES7 are kind of much more modern and have a lot more modern language features. Just makes your life a lot simpler. So, you know, you need to have a good handle on JavaScript. You need to have a good handle on Docker. So if you're going to, you know, develop locally on your computer, you're going to want to run an Ethereum node locally, because it'll just be faster. You'll get better output and better control over it. So that's kind of, you know, you execute the Ganache blockchain in Docker, and then Solidity itself. So I think that's kind of the last one. Solidity is not a particularly hard language to learn. It's just more all the nuance that goes with it. And, you know, don't get worried about kind of writing in the assembly or the EVM kind of assembly language. You don't really need to do that unless you're doing some really advanced stuff. So yeah, I'd say, you know, check out the Truffle Suite. And then those are kind of the initial skill sets you're going to need to have. So, you know, there's tons of good information if you look for a JavaScript tutorial. The Ethereum Solidity documentation is really, really good. So I'd highly recommend just sticking with the documentation, and then maybe hop on YouTube and watch some tutorials. The last one to kind of call out is when you interact with Ethereum, you need, I would probably use a JavaScript library to interact with it. So you have Web3. Which is good. And then there's another really good one that I'll call out called Ethers.js. I personally prefer Ethers.js because it's a bit more of an opinionated framework, meaning that the creator kind of makes some choices for you, so your life's a little bit easier rather than giving you all the choices to figure out everything yourself. You can kind of get up and running with Ethers.js much faster than I have been able in the past to get up and running with Web3. And that library just lets you query data in the blockchain. So, you know, read Alistair's balance or read past transactions or read logs or whatever it happens to be.
Wow. Thank you so much for providing all that information, Tim. I mean, that's going to help out so many people listening right now. Like, seriously, thank you so much for doing that. Alistair, so Broadhaven.
Yeah.
What are you guys thinking for 2019? We're going to start a conference. We're going to do a music festival. What are we doing?
Well, I want to talk about the end of 2018 first, Carl, because that's we've got something pretty exciting.
Yeah,
we've been working on ourselves. So we have a project which Tim pushed last night. It's gone live. So it's called cardsofcrypto.com, and it is a service that allows you to send a crypto Christmas card to all your nearest and dearest hodlers out there.
Oh my God, that's awesome, Tim.
So you can. So we've created a service which allows you to send a small amount of cryptocurrency to a friend without knowing their wallet address. So it's a bit like getting a sort of Amazon gift card and sending that in the post to someone. So you can just give them a small amount, say, hey, buy a beer with this, and send them a tiny bit of cryptocurrency, and no need to know their public address to do that. So that's something
awesome. You know who I'm going to share this with? I'm going to share this with Ken Bozak. He's all about this kind of stuff. I don't know if you guys know who Ken is. He's amazing. I'm going to share this with Ken. He's going to love this. That's awesome, guys. This is pretty cool.
Yeah. So what we go for it, Tim.
I was going to say, like, one of the things that, you know, we really like, we want to educate and get more people excited about crypto. And so I think one of the biggest challenges right now is kind of the barrier to adoption, right? So we're kind of just playing with different ways to make it easier for people to use Ethereum or use any sort of blockchain. So, you know, for someone creating and sending this card, they don't have to know anything about cryptocurrency. You know, you pay with a Visa or a MasterCard. So we charge $5 for the service, and then you can embed up to $25 in any, well, right now it's just Ethereum, but what we'll do is we'll launch Bitcoin later this week, and then we'll integrate a bunch of altcoins as well. So, you know, for a mother or father who knows nothing about cryptocurrencies, but knows their kid loves cryptocurrencies, would hopefully not have much of an issue kind of sending this to someone. And so the idea is kind of, you know, make the barrier to entry really low, be a bit opinionated, so kind of do things automatically for people and make the best choice for them. And then that way you'll hopefully get more people interested in using the service rather than kind of just being too scared that it's cryptocurrency and immediately running away.
That's so cool. You even have like a different image you can use. That's cool.
So, I mean, like we just launched it last night. So, I mean, I know there's a few bugs to work out. So, for example, I think you use Brave, don't you?
Sometimes. Yeah, but people on the Telegram definitely use it. We're talking about it today.
Yeah, I know we're using the Google Cloud to host some of the code here. So I haven't got around to removing everything and over to our domains yet. So some ad blockers may block some of the backend API calls we do, but all that stuff will be kind of fixed over the next week or so. But yeah, I mean, if there's any coins that you want to be able to send, just let us know and we'll add them.
Cardsofcrypto.com. I'll put a link in the show notes for sure, and we'll make sure to spread this out on social media. I'll send Ken Bozak some crypto for Christmas, and then he'll share it out, and then before you know it, it's a whole social effect that happens. That's what I like about the crypto space. Everybody is building cool stuff and everybody wants to share it and everybody wants to help each other. That's what it's all about.
I certainly wouldn't want to do the cool stuff like the Zero Project or any of those big juggernaut projects, but it's just kind of, you know, a little fun type project.
This is perfect. This is perfect for the holidays for sure. I feel like we've covered everything when it comes to Ethereum. Do you guys have any final words? Or you know what? Here, I have one more question. Probably Tim, you could probably answer this better. When you first saw, you know, Ethereum or Bitcoin, I'm not sure which cryptocurrency you saw first, but when you first got into this, What was it? Was it the ideal of decentralization that got you hooked to it, and that's what you wanted to spread to Alistair, or was it something else, or what was it about cryptocurrency that really got you hooked?
I can't pretend I'm that angelic. It was the free internet money.
Really?
I think that was the headline that grabbed my attention. No, initially just exploring the technology was like, I really enjoyed just kind of building, well, getting a bunch of miners and starting to put them together and then kind of getting them set up. And it was just that kind of journey of learning. You know, the fact that it is real money out the other side is just a bonus. Right. And then that makes it become a bit more serious as well, right? Because it's kind of a real skin in the game. But no, initially it was just kind of back to the original.
Shut you up about it, Tim. You talk about it every single lunchtime. It was really boring.
What did he tell you about it?
You go past his room, because we used to live in like blocked accommodation. You go past his room and all you could hear is because he'd have his mind running, and his window open even in winter would be open because his room was so hot. And so everyone sort of knew he was up to something weird in his room, because this sound like he's running a Hoover the whole time. And then every single lunchtime he'd be in there telling people about what he's up to, anyone that would listen. And remember him running in the mess one day when I think Bitcoin had hit like $250, and he was just like, guys, it's $250. Everyone's like, most people outside of a sort of a handful were not interested at all with what he was doing. And so we just couldn't understand why he was so excited about all this stuff. I think later on in the year, someone else was running a miner in their room, and I think they set their room on fire. So I think they got banned after that. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's one of the Bitmain miners, some of the kind of cheaper Chinese.
Oh, yeah, that's why. Because they ran it for 7 months and then they shipped it back.
So that was the early days. So, but yeah, his enthusiasm got me. So although Tim says free internet money, he was definitely talking about all the other. He gets really into the one thing, fun thing working about Tim is he gets into the weeds and you can, if you ask him and set him going, then he'll tell you everything he's learned, which is awesome. So it means I don't have to read as much. I can just ask Tim. He's my Wikipedia.
That's awesome. What was it for you, Alistair?
His enthusiastic character, and you when he's trying to when you have no reference point for blockchain, or I guess not, was we weren't thinking about blockchain then, but decentralized currency, and someone's trying to explain it to you and how you know cryptography is working in how that's helping it achieve it, and how these things are distributed everywhere, and seeing sort of slowly being persuaded of potential is quite a fun process to sort of go back to someone, at lunchtime, wait for a day, think about it, ask a few more questions, and I guess that was quite a fun process, understanding it, and then helping other people understand that is also really fun. So when we've worked with other people and we see them, when we sort of give them enough information where they start coming back with ideas to us, like, can we do this? What about if we did this with this service we're running? Is that possible? And for us to go, yes, I think it is. And then we have to go away and work out how they would do it and actually put it into practice. So that kind of, that sort of joy of like figuring out how something worked and then thinking through all the potential possibilities. And 90% of the possibilities may just be nonsense and not real, but thinking about how these things could have, could have potentially affect not just businesses but like the wider economy, and that's exciting. So anyone who's not enthused by that is strange to me.
Absolutely. That's what I think that one of the first things that I thought was really cool was when I think it was Andreas when he said, you have your private keys and you can take them anywhere with you. So if you want to smuggle money across the world, you can. I was like, whoa, that's cool. That was one of the things where I was like, holy crap, this is game changing.
Yeah, and I see it linked in with, so when Turkey has a problem this year, geopolitically, has a run on their currency, then suddenly this thing that Tim was talking about in over lunch, 8 years ago, is suddenly relevant to that world event now. So there's a run on a Turkish currency, and then suddenly it hits the top. It becomes the number one currency for people purchasing Bitcoin, and so it's starting to tie in with all this stuff, which is really exciting.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And I know Venezuela.
Exactly.
I forget the other company or the other country.
Argentina's pretty big on it as well. Or was.
Yeah, Argentina. They were like, they bought the dip, and I think since April it's been going up. Read some of the news today. What other stuff do you guys have going on? So we have the cardsofcrypto.com.
Yep.
What are you guys planning for 2019 and kind of going forward, and where should people be able to reach you at?
Well, 2019, we're just sort of continuing with our current sort of work. We've got a couple of projects on the go, which is really fun. Hopefully we'll be able to talk about them a bit more next year. I think we'll continue trying to think up these little side projects like Cards of Crypto, anything that we can do outside of our main job that sort of create a new service or create a new idea that we can sort of share. We'll continue sort of exploring that space, I think. We're trying to do a few more talks on blockchains and games. That's a space we've been involved in quite closely for the last sort of 9 months or so. That's probably our biggest area of expertise. So we did a talk recently, and we're trying to do a couple more of those. I think it's just keep going to all the, we're really lucky in London. There's a really strong community here of like meets and lots of big names come through London and talk. So it's just great to attend all those. So we'll keep going to those and keep meeting people at those events. Tim,
have
you got anything to add, Tim, at all?
No, I'm just excited to see where the technology goes, really. Every I think something I should have mentioned earlier, Carr, to your kind of developer listeners is, you know, don't ever think you know everything, right? Like every single day you're going to be learning something new. And so I'm just kind of excited. I love that journey of learning. So I'm kind of, you know, excited to see where Ethereum goes, right? Or what new blockchain technology emerges.
I'm also excited for the Thriller Studio, that game built in 2019.
Oh, okay. Gosh, man, like y'all donating, you know, means the world to me. Like, it really
does. No worries.
I'm so excited about that. Hopefully, I'm praying to the Bitcoin gods. Hopefully we can raise enough money, and then hopefully, you know, crypto goes up a little bit, and then I can just put in the rest at some point. Yeah. That's what I'm kind of hoping of.
Well, you're prolific with your output. Like the amount of stuff you're creating is amazing. The amount of interviews.
Impressive. I mean, yeah.
Oh wow! Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Your production machine.
Yeah, I know. I knew exactly. Put me on the blockchain. What was I going to say? Thank you so much for coming on the show. I feel like y'all have opened the door wide for people either that were, you know, working on other blockchain projects or were kind of on the fence about Ethereum. I feel like we kind of got some people over now. That's a good thing. And then I also feel like you guys are just cool dudes just to hang out with. So thanks for coming on the show. I feel like I'm hanging out with friends.
Yeah,
it's cool.
We'll come, and if you're ever in London, come say hi. And if we're in Austin, we'll make sure to.
Yeah, if you guys come to Austin, let me know. It'd be a good time. I think that's all I got. You guys have anything else?
No, man, that's been great.
Okay. No, yeah, I mean, just if, you know, if anyone has questions, please, you know, reach out. Always happy to talk about blockchain really to anyone or any kind of aspect of it. So if it's the development question or how to get started or to talk about code or whatever, yeah, please, I'm just happy to help anyone out.
Awesome. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get on to the end of the show.
And he's slow. To fear of fear.
Thank you so much to Tim and Alistair for coming on the show and talking Ethereum. I really appreciate it. Check out all their information here in the show notes, Broadhaven, and of course, Crypto Cards. It's awesome. And thank you again to every single one of you for listening every single day. It really brings a ray of just enormous happiness in my life. And I just want to say thank you for that. Buy Bitcoin, save the world.
This is the end of the show. You have been listening to Thriller Podcast with Carr Gonzalez. Remember, Thriller Podcast is not financial advice. Everything Carr said likely won't come true. It is up to you. Now go, do your own research. Listen to other dudes that start their name with crypto, and not Carr. And remember, buy Bitcoin and save the world. One Satoshi at a time.